Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
You know, here I am just trying to do my best. Finally, Bulldog takes a day off so I can complain. Trying to do my best. You know, I don't see him making mock schedules. He's not putting his neck out there. I am. Here it is. Like, I made a mock schedule. And he's like, oh, they'll never play Tampa on Christmas. Like, I don't know if they'll play Tampa on Christmas. There are teams on their schedule, I think, that are maybe too good for Christmas. And he's like, he seems to have heard something about that the teams who played on Christmas last year won't this year. That's the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Texans. They're all on the Bills' schedule. There goes four games. What do you want, the Jets? I don't know. Maybe it'll be the Jets. Sal Capaccio, I know I can count on Sal to buddy up here when it comes to schedule stuff. I don't know, Sal. Is Tampa Bay at Buffalo not pretty cool? Pretty interesting? There's no history that's important, but still.
No, I do agree with that, right? I mean, like, it's pretty cool. You got Baker Mayfield. You got Josh Allen. You know, they're a team that was in the playoffs last year, for sure. You don't get them here a lot, but they were just here a couple of years ago. I think Tampa's a sneaky team for some bigger game here in Buffalo. You know what I mean? I don't think it has to be a Sunday at 1, I guess the way I would say it. But how about, you're saying like the Bulldog has like schedule inside information here? Is that what you're saying?
No, not exactly. He thought that he'd heard, because we talked about how the Chiefs, it was reported that the Chiefs wanted to kind of own Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he thought he'd heard that the league said no to that. That there'd be different teams every year. Like, you know, international games are kind of like that, mostly. So I'm not sure it's, like, official, but that's what he seemed to think was the case.
The Chiefs have been on Christmas 2 years in a row now, though. So, I mean,
Black Friday? That was Christmas Day, wasn't it? You're right, the Raiders. Yeah. The Raider game was on Christmas, you're right.
Yeah, so I don't mean, unless they change the rule and said they're going to start doing that now, that hasn't been the case the last 2 years. They have been on Christmas the last 2 years, so I don't think that's a rule. And like, we talked extensively about this kind of stuff with Mike North on the podcast, and I didn't get that sense at all.
Okay.
I mean, he didn't say that it wasn't possible, they wouldn't do it or anything like that, but there was no indication that they would just pivot from different teams.
And we talked a little bit as well about how the Hallmark movie thing might be relevant to the equation. So Bill's at home hoping for some snow globe snow, promote the movie, right? That's
100%. I think there's a really solid chance the Bills are playing at home on Christmas in some capacity, probably at night in that case, what you're saying, snow globe, Christmas, Hallmark movie. It's just, you know, just it all fits. I don't know. I mean, who knows how it's going to actually turn out. I still think it's kind of odd that the schedule kind of has to be done here without knowing about Aaron Rodgers, right, and what his situation is, because I do think that would impact. Now, the Steelers are a national brand anyway. They're going to get primetime games anyway. But aren't they even more so in the spotlight of Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback versus, you know, someone else and whoever's on the roster now, I guess?
Yeah, probably. So we have to wait on him again. That's become kind of par for the course. Okay, so today is the 2nd of May. The big schedule announcement, the unveiling, is May 14th, which is a week from Wednesday. What do we get between now and then? Like the morning of, the networks will each maybe announce a game of theirs. International games prior to that, what do you expect?
Yeah, schedule-wise, what we're going to get is probably something like that. I remember a couple of years ago, I was literally like at the gym in the morning, I'm on the treadmill, and bam, all of a sudden it was announced the Bills would play the Tennessee Titans week two as part of a Monday night doubleheader, right? I mean, like those things start to come out because what happens is the week of the schedule, and this makes sense, I would look for this again, that you'll have some of the national morning shows, the CBS morning show, ABC, NBC, all the ones, whatever they're called, Today and Good Morning America, I guess, all that kind of stuff. Like they'll have some sort of programming built in and designed around the NFL and releasing what they're going to be having to promote on their network, right? So that's what happened a couple years ago. And ABC, like Good Morning America, all right, we're going to be having the Bills and Titans, ESPN, ABC, like week two. So something like that should happen again in some capacity. That's what I would expect. As far as the international games, it is interesting that years ago we'd know all of the international games, the home away and the home opponents and the home teams and the opponents by like December and January of the previous year. We don't get that anymore. So, but I wouldn't be stunned if we start to get it between now and May 14th, though, and before the actual schedule comes out.
Mm-hmm. Anytime you're ready, they're ready. I'm happy to know, like dribs and drabs, Sal, just sprinkle in a couple of announcements here and there. That'd be good for me. This might not matter ultimately because there's 32 teams. I know all that. But when you think about the stadium in its last year, what might be most significant, more significant than the other, opening at home, closing at home? With the playoffs, you know, being such a normal expectation for the Bills, I wonder if that would mean anything too.
I do too. According to Mike, we asked them this specifically. They wouldn't, I kind of got the feeling that playing a regular season game at home and closing out a stadium isn't kind of on their radar to make sure they do anything special from a schedule wise, right? From a team wise. And that's because I think a lot of it is what you just said, Mike. They've been going to the playoffs and you kind of can't predict that because if you do it and then it's not the last game, what does it really matter? I don't even know if, in fact, I'll go this far. I don't think the league actually cares that much about the last year of the stadium like the Bills do, right? Like as far as scheduling, it's much more for them the first year of the new stadium. Like that was made clear. Like 2026, opening a new stadium is much more relevant to the league than closing another stadium. Now, that being said, maybe I mischaracterized what I just said a second ago. They'll be thoughtful about it, but it's not nearly as important to them as how they want to introduce a new stadium.
All right, so getting more close to the present here, of course, the draft was last weekend, and we've talked about it many times between then and now, but as we are a week away here, all the Brandon Bean business from Monday and just everything sort of sinking in about this draft, how does it look? I mean, of course, they went hard on defense, and that was, you know, obviously hotly debated. I feel like it makes sense. Do you feel like, you know, and any sort of longer view takeaways from last weekend?
You know, that I think that the longer view is they've kind of rebuilt the defense from an age standpoint as well, right? I mean, it's not just that they've kind of had to get more talent, an infusion of talent. I think they've kind of overhauled what they've done looking forward. You have several guys on defense entering the final year of their contract. You do have a couple guys on offense. Obviously, James Cook is notable. Connor McGovern is one of them, David Edwards. I think you feel really good about where their offensive line, though, is. You can extend those guys. I mean, maybe at some point McGovern gets extended. He's done a nice job, but you got guys waiting in the wings. You got Alec Anderson. You got a couple other guys, you know, on the roster that are Cedric Van Pran Granger, right? I think they feel really comfortable where they've put that. James Cook is definitely a kind of a different bucket on how we talk about that. And we have on defense, it's AJ Epenesa in his last year, Daquan Jones in his last year, Matt Milano in his last year. You know, these are guys that they're going to have to think about replacing down the road and making sure that they kind of have the right people in place beyond this year. And I think that was kind of really stood out to me a little bit more in the draft, even as much as just getting new talent that can come in and play. And I think that goes hand in hand with Christian Benford's extension, Terrell Bernard's extension, Greg Rousseau's extension. This is the new core. they're the core, and they're bringing in this infusion of youth, that they're all going to be here now for the next 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Also, from this week, again, back to Bean and how the week started Monday morning, then he does the afternoon show, he does Pat McAfee ultimately, and really was Tyler Dunn at length, really was out there this week. Maybe this, I'm not saying that this is necessarily a thing. I just wonder if you have thought about or maybe would have noticed that he is putting himself out there more. I mean, Bean has never at all been invisible or anything like that, but I wonder if we're maybe at a new phase with him in some way.
I've thought about it more. I'm going to be really honest with you. I think that maybe because of what happened, we're thinking a little bit too much in that regard, and maybe Ivan and I have. Like, is that true? Because honestly, like, he's done a lot of this stuff, especially around this time of year. Mm-hmm. If you go back the last few years, he's been on McAfee a lot, and he's done a lot of these kinds of, you know, these interviews and gone on different platforms, whether it's local or national. I remember a couple of years ago him going on Jim Rome right around this time of year. Because I remember him, that's when he said, hey, you know, I could make a move that could, you know, really be one big move for us, but that might really put us at a disadvantage years from now, and I want to be a contender. I remember him saying that. It was right around this time of year. It was early, you know, this offseason, this part, maybe up into June or something like that. He has always been visible. You're right. Maybe he's doing a little bit more just by kind of numbers. He goes on Eric Wood's podcast quite a bit. He's done that already recently. So I don't know if – I haven't necessarily run it and looked at, well, what did he do last year? Because I do think that, you know, this has been something he's been doing, and maybe we just notice more because of what happened Monday and then kind of really – going on and being more visible since then.
Mm-hmm. Rookie mini camp next weekend, correct? May 9th?
Yep. Well, May 9th is the media portion. They'll be in town, I think, the 9th and the 10th. The rookies will be on the field the 9th and the 10th. We, I think, will only get media to see them and talk to them on Friday the 9th.
Okay. How do they schedule that? Some teams are this weekend. Is it maybe teams with new coaches? Don't they get an extra week? I wonder how do they go about deciding like the time between the draft and when they want to start?
So the rule is by the NFL, you can choose either the first weekend after the draft or the second weekend after the draft. If I remember correctly, the Bills have almost always been the second weekend. Maybe there's been a first weekend in there. I don't know other than maybe just how their preference would be, and maybe they just want to get more OTAs in or whatever, however the veterans are doing. But it's always kind of been like that. And, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, the Bills choose to do that. Now, I think this year, a lot of times they've had the rookie premiere going on in LA for some of these guys. And that's where they do some of those pictures and cards. Maybe the Bills don't want to interfere with that. I'm not really sure. I don't think there's no like rule about new head coach or no new head coach like there is with the start of workouts. It's literally, you get to choose. You want the first weekend or the second weekend in May when you want to do this.
So this next Friday, next weekend, will be interesting for those defensive players, the big load up from Hairston to the, you know, the two defensive tackles, a couple of DBs in there as well. It'd be interesting to sort of take a first look at everybody, I suppose. I was preparing to talk to you and to Tyler later, reading Bean with Tyler Dunn, and had the quote about, you know, it was a spinoff with the wide receiver sort of controversy, if you will, but getting Mahomes, Burrow, and Jackson on the ground in the playoffs was his kind of like bottom line. And so I looked up some of the numbers on this, quarterbacks and sacks in the playoffs. Mahomes has been sacked far and away the most of any quarterback since 2018 in the playoffs. No surprise, because he's also had far and away the most games. 46 sacks in 21 games. But Sal, in four games against the Bills of those 21, it is 5 sacks for 20 yards in those four games combined. So I can certainly appreciate, say what you want about other needs, certainly appreciate this point. Of course, in the Super Bowl, the Eagles sacked him more often than the Bills have ever done in all those playoff games combined. As it happens, he named the three most sacked playoff quarterbacks since 2018, probably not a coincidence, and they're all in the AFC. Mahomes, Burrow, Jackson, Allen is fourth. And so, I mean, that's a clear objective here. It's going to be a long time, though, before we know whether they can do it.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, he knew that stat and that's why. Or if it's just he's naming the best quarterbacks, right? I mean, like, that's just kind of what you do. The guys that have been in AFC championship games recently. And Mahomes and Burrow and Lamar Jackson. Those are the three, right, Mike? That
yes.
He mentioned those three.
Yeah.
I mean, I just if I was doing that, if I was just rattling off, well, you know what? You really got to get to blank, blank, blank. I'd probably use those three quarterbacks, to be quite honest with you, without knowing any numbers, because those are the three quarterbacks I think that are considered with Josh Allen the top four quarterbacks in the AFC. You might put Justin Herbert in there, but they haven't been in that position. So the only teams that have really been there, I mean, C.J. Stroud, I guess, right? But that's it. It's really been those four quarterbacks. So I get why he might actually, you know, use that as a reference point for those. Look, we all know the Bills have failed to do that, and that has been the talking point. I think the question is why, because they've had good moments getting to the quarterback. They haven't been great at it. They haven't had these number one and two guys that have been amazing at sacks over the last few years and all that kind of stuff. They've been okay at it at times, but we all know they've kind of failed in the most critical games and moments of getting to the quarterback. The question is why. Some people will tell you it's because of coaching and scheme and, you know, they because of what they do there. Some people will tell you they don't have the right personnel. Maybe some people will tell you it's a mix of both. I don't know. But that's always been the talk of what's happened in the playoffs. That's where Sean McDermott gets so much criticism from so many people, obviously, Bills fans and media, of what they have and haven't done, you know, over the last several years and why they haven't been there. So I don't know the answer to that question. And I think that anybody who tries to answer that question is just kind of where your opinion is, where it falls. I think at the end of the day, the Bills have told you what they think, though. They need new talent there. They need more talent there. They went out and signed Joey Bosa. No more Von Miller, I know. They went out and signed Joey Bosa. They went out and signed Michael Hoyt. They went out and drafted Landon Jackson. They drafted two defensive tackles. They signed another defensive tackle in free agency. I think the Bills, by their own actions, have told you what they think about the reason.
Yeah, you want to get to a point where a team like the Chiefs is almost forced into sacrificing, you know, a blocking back or an extra tight end, keep them in the out from running routes, keep them in the pocket or whatever to try to offset what you're doing there. But a long way to go, and then, you know, we'll get to the playoffs, and these teams will all have played each other, Chiefs, Bengals, Bills, Ravens, all on the Bills' home schedule. So it'll be a rematch if they get to the playoffs against any of those guys. Hey, sure, those are the three quarterbacks you named. They're certainly the three quarterbacks the Bills GM could name. I mean, they've played seven playoff games against those three teams combined, but interesting to see how relatively little success the Bills have had with Mahomes in particular versus his career in the playoffs overall. You know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's an issue, right? That's a problem, and that's what you look at and go, wait a minute. Why were these other teams able to do it? Why were the Texans able to do it? Why were the Bengals able to do it? How come the Bills haven't? Why were the Eagles able to do it? How come the Buccaneers? I mean, you look at the teams, I mean, they haven't lost all these games, but you know, they were in tussles and ones they weren't. And that's been part of the reason that they haven't been able to protect him. And what was the Chiefs failing last year mostly? Offensive line. They couldn't protect their quarterback. And when it came time, the Bills couldn't get to him, like a lot of teams did. And that's kind of what's happened here. And I think that's why we are where we are and why the GM says what he says.
Allen sacked 28 times in 13 postseason games. Special hat tip to Sam Darnold for being sacked 9 times in one last year against the Rams. If you don't mind, it's a little bit out of left field, but another schedule thought I had for you was I'm preparing for literally 11 rookie fantasy drafts that start tomorrow. And
oh
so
God.
Thinking a lot about the rookies, and Travis Hunter is maybe the biggest star of them all. What do you think Jacksonville – how do you think Jacksonville might rate in terms of prime time?
Ooh, in terms of prime time, I'd have to look back to see what they got last year. They were in Buffalo last year, for one.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Might have been it.
Yeah, I still don't think they're going to get a ton. They're going to – because they're already going to get two international games, right?
Okay.
And you're probably looking at one more primetime game, maybe two, because as much as they have some talent and – Travis Hunter certainly moves the needle. I think the league is already kind of showcasing them in a different way a little bit, and that's, you know, that can be enough. So I don't think they're quite at the level where, okay, on top of all these international games are playing, we got to kind of put them in all these windows to make sure the country sees them.
Hunter is the reason I ask, just because he's so different. I looked at it was the first round, and you might have been with us when we talked about this last Friday, but all the skill position guys who went in round one, it might have been like, I don't know, 10 or 12, including quarterbacks, The only ones who are on their the Bills schedule are the two NFC South guys, Tet McMillan for Carolina and Ibuka for Tampa. All the other running back, receiver, tight end, quarterback rookies picked in round one, the Bills don't see.
Last year they saw Marvin Harrison Jr. week one.
Yep.
That was interesting, right? Yeah, I mean, the Bills have quarterbacks, tough quarterbacks on their schedule. But you're right. I mean, when it comes to really kind of hot rookie talent, offensively, not as much to say as far as the schedule is concerned.
I guess they might get Tyler Shugg, Sal.
Yeah, they could, I guess. You're right about that. And I'm wondering, I mean, honestly, who's the quarterback when the Bills play the Browns? We don't know what week that is yet, but I don't know who the quarterback is week one.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Yeah. I asked somebody, I had John Scott on from Channel 2. He has grown up, you know, watching the Cleveland Browns. He's a Cleveland Browns fan grown up. So he still follows them. And I said, who's their starting quarterback week one? He said he believes it's Joe Flacco. Well, then I had Jonathan Peterlin, on, who is your counterpart at the Fan of Cleveland. He's on the air right now. He's their afternoon show host. I asked him the same question. Who is their starting quarterback week one? And he said either Shedeur Sanders or Kenny Pickett. So I think this is fascinating.
Yeah. I did want to ask you about them. We don't have much time left, but how would you play it? Or, like, if you had the autonomy, maybe ownership is in your hair there.
Yeah.
But how would you play it? Or maybe if you like this question more, what chance do you have of whatever you would consider success with the Browns and the quarterback juggling? I think, by the way, as you think of that, the Browns and the Steelers both, you could end up with, if you play them right away, it's one answer to that question. And if you play them in December, it's someone else, especially Cleveland.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I think, Mike, the first question I have to ask myself, my staff, my organization is, what is our goal this year? Are we trying to win this year? Are we trying to make the playoffs? Are we trying to make sure we're at a good spot that we can kind of build something here? Because that has to be asked. I'm not talking about tanking. I'm talking about just kind of where we are. Are we trying to actively win? If that is the case, you have to start Joe Flacco. He is the quarterback in that roster that actually gives them the best chance to win right away, I believe. He's a veteran. Now, you could say he's not that good. I get it. But compared to the other guys on the team, I still think he gives them the best chance to win right away. But I think that if you're the Cleveland Browns, you look at that division, you look at where you are. I actually works out in their favor in this regard, which is there's not as much pressure now to play him early. There's not as much pressure on for him to play early. And I think that you can let him develop a little bit. So you don't have to put him in right away. So, hey, whoever that is, if that winds up being Flacco or Kenny Pickett, if you decide that you don't have to win this year, then I don't know why you have Joe Flacco on the team. Let Kenny Pickett play if that's the case. I don't know about Dylan Gabriel. It's got to be Shedeur Sanders over Dylan Gabriel at the end of the day, even though they draft him higher, I would think. So I think if your answer is we need to try and win, you got to start Joe Flacco. And if the answer is, I think we're okay, look what we're doing here, let's build it, then I think it's got to be either Pickett or Sanders. Let them battle it out, and you're okay if Shedeur Sanders doesn't start right away.
And I think most coaches would play it down the middle, which is start a veteran is what usually happens, and then move to a rookie once, you know, you're kind of drawing dead. Would be a great camp to cover, wouldn't it? Cleveland this year with Sanders there, and just be a lot of drama. All right, Sal, thanks for today. Enjoy your weekend.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Sal Capaccio on the Westher Hotline, brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor, your place to buy a case. What is your outlet? Flacco is 40. I've had some reason for thinking that I'm going to go to his Pro Football Reference page and see, like, he's actually 33 or something like that, way younger than you think, but no, that wouldn't make sense. He was in the league. He started 16 games as a rookie in 2008. So if he's 33, he would have been, what, 16 doing that? 17? That definitely did not happen. The NFL wouldn't even allow that. He started 16 games in a season back, has the show ever sounded older? 16 game schedule. Each of his first 7 games in the league, never had a losing record, QB wins. He missed time in 15, came right back to full start, 16 and 17, then Lamar Jackson showed up. And since then, he's been on Broncos, Jets, Browns, Colts, now back to the Browns. How would you play that in Cleveland? Any rookie questions? I don't know if Sal is in any dynasty leagues where you'd have your rookie drafts getting started. I don't think he is. Something else I thought I might ask him, didn't get to it. 803-0550 for your calls. 5 o'clock, Tyler Dunn. 5:30, Dave Buchanan. Bulldog is off today. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
I think Landon Jackson could be a better player in the NFL than he was in college. They didn't necessarily play to his strength as well as they could at Arkansas. They almost kind of looked at his size and went, well, you're more of a power rusher. You're going to play inside. But actually, if you watch a lot of his wins, his best work came threatening the edge. And he showed with the pre-combine process, the athleticism is there as well. Like, he's not just a big, slow, lumbering type of power player. He's a guy that has got the speed and dynamism and explosiveness to threaten the edge.
Sam Monson, longtime PFF analyst. Now he and Steve Palazzolo, their podcast, Check the Mic. Really good. Monson talking about Landon Jackson, the Bills' third-round pick. I did not spend my week banging on the Bills trading up in round two like they did so much, because I did think a week ago, right now, as we were approaching day two, that they would want to get into round three. And I don't have the data for that. It just feels like that third round, as you know, you're closing out the second night of the draft, and then Saturday maybe is more like a free-for-all. I mean, it's not that they don't take it seriously, but I feel like the third round is a really strategic. I wouldn't want to be out of it, and the Bills were, until they made that trade. I mean, they didn't get crushed on the value charts at all by that trade. They gave up a fourth, I think, and got a seventh to move up and then get that third. They traded both of their second-round picks, moving up in round two and out of round two with the other one. And I think Jackson a little bit probably helped me, because a lot of people really like him. And it read like he was good value at pick, what was it, 72 maybe? I was sitting with a friend watching the draft last Friday night, and he called it. He said, this is the guy, Landon Jackson, and it was. In the second round, I called somebody else, and it did not prove correct. Donovan Ezeraku, an edge rusher from Boston College who would eventually get drafted by Dallas. But I didn't know a lot about Sanders, the guy that Bills picked after moving up in the second round. So, you know me, like, when I need it, I've got it. When I need a point, next year's draft or at some point sooner, about trading up in the second round for, you know, interior defensive line, doesn't seem optimal. But I do like that they got into the third round and people like the player. 803-0550 to join me. Bulldog is off this week, talking about the week that it's been with post-draft and the firestorm that Brandon Bean created here on Monday. Last year, so this is a wide receiver point, just to, you know, brace yourselves. Last year, what did we have throughout the offseason? Diggs was gone. Right now, like beginning of May last year, the draft is over. Diggs has been traded. Davis has left in free agency. Shakir, we liked. Samuel was signed. We'll see what that is. Mac Hollins was signed. I don't know. What's that? Special teams. And then Coleman was drafted. Plus you had Knox and Kincaid, of course. Then the Bills start. So, you know, you sit there like, what do you think they have? Right? We've got a couple guys from the practice squad. KJ Hamler, you know, sort of bit parts, if you will. What did it look like? And I don't think I loved it. One thing that Bean has said this week about the wide receiver stuff is, like, last year he thought it was totally fair to question it. They didn't know how it would work, and it ended up working very well. So what happened? MVS, who got a little bit of money, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, he made it to the roster, played a little bit, didn't last. You had Chase Claypool. I got excited about him. I thought, you know, and I think that people would say the same, tons of talent, but is it in there? Does he have the dog in him, right? Is it in there for Claypool? He gets hurt right away in camp and just goes away. And there might have been one or two other guys, I think there were, that just sort of seemed like long shot candidates, but reflected the Bills having an effort, making an effort to just hoping to find gold at the position. And ultimately, none of those guys were gold. Elijah Moore, I think this maybe even could be unanimous. Like, he comes in above those names from a year ago, which makes the week we've just had a little bit more interesting still. Like, he is not a long shot to make it, probably. Maybe he's even a favorite. $5 million or up to $5 million. Maybe he's even a favorite to make the roster, but he's not so clear cut. I mean, he lasted through free agency all the way past the draft. They didn't draft one. They signed Elijah Moore, maybe because of that. They had more of a need for one at that point. He is going to be a challenge for me to try to slot because of all the things put together, how adamant the GM has been about the receiver position. Like, it's not the need. I don't think it's the need you do, to put it nicely. But he signs Moore, and he's got a pretty good. It's better than last year, and like, you sort of know what you have. You've lost Hollins, and you know Cooper came and went in between there, but you have a better idea of what Khalil Shakir means to your team. More yards after the catch. Still has not been a red zone factor really at all, but a good player. You know not only what you got from Coleman, but what you think you need to work on with him. And there's Kincaid is a little bit of a part of that too, the same way. You have more of a base of knowledge on the unit than you did last year. When last year you're sort of at this point, early May, trying to figure out how it fits together. And I think this year, You better know that. I mean to say, you know that better than you did a year ago. What will Elijah Moore be? I mean, is this a player where you need to look at him in camp and see what the chemistry looks like, where he's at physically? It's his fifth year in the league now, although he's still very young, and you know, roles and other things. I think he's got to play outside to matter. Samuel, who I left out again, which I just always seem to forget about him, but I said to Bulldog the other day before Elijah Moore happened that Samuel feels a little bit too important for my comfort level right now for what they have or what they don't have anymore. And maybe Moore is kind of like, it's Moore or Samuel, perhaps. And both, you know, are getting decent money. And Palmer, of course, is in this mix too at even more money. And I don't think I mentioned him this time. So there still is some uncertainty, I guess I'd have to say. But last year, going out and just sort of hoping for a hit in the players they brought in, that seemed a little bit more, you know, hopeful, like fingers are crossed, maybe there's somebody here than this. Now, this, you've got a financial commitment to Samuel, you know, somewhat of a commitment, not huge, to Moore, and yes, to Palmer, and then it's about how to juggle these guys, because you're not going to want to freeze Coleman out. You do that, then, you know, we're talking about that draft pick all the time. And, of course, Kincaid and Shakir will almost, you know, he'll definitely be on the field a lot. So, different, but not all the way different from last year. One thing I've been talking about this week and today a little bit, too, is the NFL schedule, which comes out on May 14th, so a week from Wednesday. I wonder what kind of year it will be when we talk in terms of the stadium closing and just kind of what people are feeling, how people are feeling about that. You have in these kind of things always both. You have the nostalgia about the stadium that's closing, and then also the excitement about the new place. Next year will be crazy fun for that. But if you ever have an idea about like how the schedule should look with the stadium in mind, I'm thinking about that a lot. And I don't feel like I really know anything about how that will turn out. You could have week one here as a final opening day. You could have the finale here as the final regular season home game. You could have both. You have the teams where the Bills have played Jets, Dolphins, Patriots twice a year since forever. Dolphins technically a little later because they came in the league later, but still. Then you've got the Giants, not the New York Giants, but the big shots. What a year to close it out. Kansas City here, Baltimore here, Cincinnati here, Philadelphia here, Super Bowl champs. That's great. Then the other two games are the Saints and the Bucks, and, you know, I guess do what you want. But I think about the schedule a lot, always, because it's just fun for me. And then also with this being that year for the Bills, the little bit extra that comes with it. Take a break here. We'll talk to Tyler Dunn at 5. This is Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today and Monday. This is WGR. Horses. It's that weekend. Just a few minutes ago, I looked up and it was a total downpour at Churchill Downs. I have never been. I have a few, we all do maybe, a few friends who have gone or even go. You know, Eric Wood, I think of, has been there maybe a lot in Louisville, right? That would make sense. Think of like all the Tom Brady types, the celebrities, the sundresses, the suits, the glasses, the mint juleps, the whole vibe there. I would like to go once. It's just the kind of thing you say because here I am at this point in my life having never really made any effort to do it. It's, you know, you got to make choices. Get to an age where I've been there already, so maybe I should, even though I loved it, I shouldn't do that. I should do this instead. It's going to take some planning. I doubt some weekend in early May some year somebody's just going to take me to the Kentucky Derby. I'm going to have to probably have to figure that out. But when I look at it, and I don't really follow horse racing, I get into it like a lot of people do this weekend or for the Triple Crown. When I look at it, I do get jealous. It is like the Masters in that way, where I think a self-respecting sports fan may really need to get there. But again, I've made no effort. Even Augusta, it's a tougher ticket, right? Someday, maybe, probably not, I don't know. But I like the idea of it. For a while, I was attacking Major League stadiums. This is 25 years ago, single road trips to Baltimore and Cleveland and Detroit, Wrigley, just checking off ballparks. Had a California trip, 2010, Anaheim, Dodger Stadium, San Diego. Have all the California stadiums, missing like 6 or 8, but again, not actively pursuing that. I might need to make some plans. The Masters and now the Derby have me feeling like I really need to go somewhere. Plus, Bulldog is at Red Rocks after being in Puerto Rico and Spain. Like, where have I? I've been nowhere since then. I went to Hamilton for my daughter's hockey a couple of times. I've been there. You know, of course, right across the Pennsylvania border to bet on something, maybe. That's that fireworks place. I've been there. I'm lacking right now. Have it on. I'm looking at Ed Olczyk. He and another NBC analyst are keeping track of their bets. It's Edzo's Bank and Matt's Bank. We all need to pay a debt of gratitude to Hank Goldberg for that. Hank's Bank. I love that. There was something about the late Hank Goldberg who was like crotchety but funny in a way, and he looked kind of funny, and he would like tell you that maybe it was $1,000. I think that's what these guys are doing. Whether it's real money or play, I'm sure they're betting on the races, maybe the same way as they're saying, you would think, but because I think Olczyk just had a big hit. Hank's Bank, and it's, you know, kind of funnier when they lose, where I'm betting $50, $20, $20, whatever, break it down. Here's, and they keep track of his bankroll through the day. I always liked that. Had some fun with friends a couple times watching the Breeders' Cup, which is in November, I believe, and just like playing along. Mike's bank, just not, it was not $1,000, but I don't know, it's different. The Kentucky Derby is the longest continuously held sporting event in America, which means it's not the Pro Bowl skills competition. It's been run for longer than that. It's not the Gus Macker. It's the Kentucky Derby. It's not the NLL playoffs tonight, the Bandits and Vancouver. That'll be a 7:30 game at the arena. Dave Buchanan will join me at 5:30 to preview it. Haven't taken calls today. Had a couple guests already. Have a couple more coming up. But I mentioned a couple of times how it is really like the week for dynasty fantasy football rookie drafts. They're not all the week after the real draft, but a lot of them are. Like I said earlier, I've got 11 that start tomorrow. They're slow. It's not like it's all happening at once. But if anybody ever hears me mention this and is curious, send me an email or something on Twitter, because it's my favorite subject almost. I'm, you know, a self-appointed advocate for fantasy football, dynasty football. If you've never played dynasty, what it does, if you have time for it in your life, what it does is it makes the draft more interesting. Landing spots and all the different rookies and what kind of fits they are on their new teams. How much draft capital was invested. Sam Panayotovic earlier mentioned Omarion Hampton for the Chargers, which you have to like there. You know, not everybody liked the player, but it's a first-round pick on a running back. And if they don't run the heck out of him, why did they do it? There were all kinds of running backs to pick from in the draft, so that's a really good sign. It's part of the thinking that Sam mentioned that goes into wanting to back him for Offensive Rookie of the Year. If you're playing Dynasty, the draft becomes way more interesting because it all sort of means something. And then the offseason, whereas in a, you know, so to speak, traditional fantasy league, you don't do anything until like August when you get together for the draft and then off you go. But to be able to make trades and to have conversations with people year-round is just more fun. So if you ever wonder about it, I can be a resource for you, just like how the rules work in different leagues that I'm in and all that kind of stuff. I'd love to talk about it, as you could probably tell. Tyler Dunn, After Sports, here on WGR.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. A new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.